Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. Tim, Michael, Mo, and the occasional guest discussing digital analytics issues of the day. Find them on Facebook at facebook.com/analytics hour and their website analyticshour.io. And now, the Digital Analytics Power Hour.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. This is episode 142. You know, digital analytics is still a relatively new profession in some senses. And as you progress in your career, it's sometimes hard to find other people who've sort of been there and done that in the things that you find that you're doing day to day in your job. And, you know, with plenty of people and vendors saying this or that technology is quote unquote changing everything about once every 3 years or so, it can also be confusing what to spend time on and how to prioritize your efforts. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, Tim, but really only one person can be the quintessential analyst. How are you doing?
There can be many, and you're killing me.
It's our co-host, Tim Wilson, Senior Director of Analytics at Search Discovery. And Mo, we got to come up with a really cool name for you. Maybe like we could run a fan contest. But how are you doing?
I'm good, but I don't think that's necessary.
Oh, I don't know. I think, you know, I've learned something about personal branding.
He'll get bored with me at some point, and then he's going to turn his sights on you, and you'll get to squirm uncomfortably for a few years.
It's just a reflection of my great admiration and respect. Anyways, Mo Kiss, analytics lead at Canva. I don't know how to pronounce it. How do you pronounce the company's name?
Canva.
It's Canva.
But you say data.
And also within marketing. I'm the marketing analytics lead.
Marketing analytics lead at Canva. So that's good. I'm finding out finally what your job title is. It seems like you get promoted pretty regularly over there. So I feel like it's not totally my fault. So in that sense, you're kind of like, you know, kind of a rising star. And I'm Michael Helbling, and I'm just talking randomly. Okay, we need a guest who has taken a lot of the combined wisdom of some of the great people in our industry. And she worked alongside Eric Matisoff from Adobe into creating a really great presentation for Adobe Summit, which was then turned into Adobe Virtual Summit because of the coronavirus pandemic. And we just thought, hey, what a great opportunity to hear a little more about this topic. So Jen Yacenda, she spent the first 12 years of her analytics career growing and leading the digital analytics practice at Starwood Hotels. And then in 2018, she transitioned and started her own hospitality-focused analytics consultancy called Travel Perspectives. And today, she is our guest. Welcome to the show, Jen.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Tim, Mo. Great to be here.
I feel like, Michael, you didn't throw in that not only she was had a jam-packed, full-on solid core summit session, and then a summit kind of shrunk things down to be shorter. Like,
there are so many things that we've lost in the pandemic, and one of them is the full session that Jen and Eric worked so hard to create. So in a certain sense, we're just delighted to have you. But maybe to kick us off, maybe just go back to the original idea and kind of explain, Jen, what you were thinking about as you kind of like kind of broach this topic, and then we'll kind of dig into some of the questions that came from it.
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, we're hoping whenever we are allowed to travel again, that maybe there's a conference where we can actually put on the full hour plus whatever session of content that we've got. But in lieu of that, we're taking all opportunities to share the great content that we collected. So for a little bit of context, Eric and I were talking about different sessions to run at Summit, and we thought there was a little bit of a gap in there's not too many sessions focused on career advice, how to grow if you're looking for the next promotion, if you're looking to get into analytics, if you've got a team that you're recently managing. There's not really a ton of sessions dedicated to how do you become a better analyst, how do you become that manager, leader for analytics that you want to be. So we kind of put our heads together and we're thinking of, you know, ways of how to become that quote unquote rock star within your organization as a rock star analyst, which is something Eric has a couple other sessions at Summit around. And so at the same time, I'd been listening to this podcast of Tim Ferriss, and he wrote a book called Tribe of Mentors, where he created this masterful recipe of questions, 11 questions that he goes around asking, you know, the Tony Hawks, the Ariana Huffingtons, the Brene Browns, you know, the people that have reached the top of their game in their fields. And he asked them the same 11 questions. So we thought, why not do that for analytics? Let's go out to the community with that same list of 11 questions.
It was funny. That was like the second, it was helping people grow with their career. I'm sure the first thing on the list was, we need more sessions about like how Adobe's platform can help you be successful. that just didn't quite make the cut because, yeah, no.
It didn't. We needed to go beyond a session at Summit that had nothing to do with an Adobe product.
It was bound to happen at some point.
But you could probably use the Adobe product to create the session. So, you know, just tie it all together.
No. Which, I mean, the analytics rockstar session, which like he took over from Brent Dykes, right? And that was always one of my, even though it did always wind up being kind of very, you know, Adobe Analytics centric, but that was definitely always a super practical tips session, but it was definitely baked into with Adobe. So,
okay, can we talk about the questions?
Yes, we can. Go ahead, Mo.
Okay, so Jen, I'm really curious. I have listened to some of Tim Ferriss's podcasts previously. Actually, the one on how to say no was one that actually did resonate with me because it's a skill that I have yet to perfect. I probably need to listen again. But I suppose I'm just curious to start with, when he asks these questions of all of these like amazing people, what are the highlights for you that you've taken away from some of those conversations he's had? Like, are there specific like moments, or is it more that you found asking these questions has led to insight yourself in the analytics community?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, I was blown away with the number of people that agreed to answer and participate in the process. So the people willing to share their stories, their experiences was awesome just to collect. I think we had 38 full participants. I probably reached out to about 90. So I had a third, 33, a little bit more than a third kind of accept, which was, I thought, pretty decent. And then, you know, compared to some of the questions that Tim Ferriss would ask, a lot of people got super personal with their responses. I think when Tim writing his book and, you know, he's asking some of the most famous people in the world, I think they were kind of a little more straightforward. And then when I reached out to the analytics community, whether it was someone fighting, you know, balancing motherhood with their career, or someone who was battling, depression or some mental challenges, they were very forthcoming with a lot of their answers and responses. And I was really touched to be on the receiving end of those answers.
Well, didn't Tim Ferriss sort of set up like, and I haven't read the book, and I have to freely admit that like from the 4-hour work week on, I cannot stand Tim Ferriss. So am I right in thinking, from kind of reading about the book and watching kind of his video talk, he does kind of encourage people to say, these are the questions I was asking and why I was asking them. And does he kind of encourage people to go ask people in their lives those same questions? Or is he really just putting them out saying, I've asked these questions and gotten them from these famous people that I know, and just read my book?
Yeah, it's more of the latter. And he kind of encourages, like, there's so many people that he interviews, and it's just, yeah, it's just kind of like you hop around, you jump around to different people and little nuggets that you get out of some of the success that they've had. One of my favorite responses, which during Corona time we're unable to do, but one of the investments, I will have to find the name, but he took flying trapeze lessons. And that was one of the investments that he said was profound impact on his life, just with a different perspective. That leap of faith with flying trapeze and the physical experience of it was something that really changed his perspective. So that's one that I added to my list from Tim. But yeah, the book is really just a manual that people can pick up at different points of their career and get inspiration from various people.
And since this is an audio form, you held up the book, it's like a good 2 inches thick, but it's also like his promo video. He kind of waves it around a lot. And I'm like, yeah, that's a hefty tome.
So Jen, have you answered all these questions yourself?
I tried. I mean, that's kind of where I started. I tried to go through and answer the questions. That's where I was wondering whether or not it would fit as a conference, like if I could actually go out and collect these responses. And it was really hard to answer all 11. So when I went out to ask respondents for their answers, I said, look, answer 3 to 5, you know, the questions that speak most to you. And Tim Ferriss does the same in his book. Not everyone answers all 11 questions. So it is quite difficult to answer all 11, but I tried for sure.
I feel like we haven't actually touched on what any of the questions are. Like,
I know.
We try like a rapid fire. We each get to pick a question and then like free association. Jen's like, and here was,
let's do it.
Actually, I had one other setup question. Did you have anybody respond? Were there any responses where you thought, huh, that seems like a terrible piece of advice and I would never share that. And I'm not going to ask you to share what that, I mean, or
that's the setup question.
No. Well, I mean, were there anywhere?
Oh, you mean setting her up? I thought you meant like laying the foundation setup question. I was like, that's just cruel.
No. Well, no, I'm curious. Cause that's like, were there, right? Cause we're all living our own life and there are definitely people who have different opinions on things.
To be honest, because it was a session that, or content that we were collecting that was going to prepare for a session, I wouldn't say that there was necessarily bad advice given, but I was definitely looking for themes to pull together into a presentation. So yeah, there was a lot of advice that didn't make it into the presentation, I will say, but a lot of it was also just more personal, less professional. So, you know, it was hard to delineate.
Yeah. Did anybody move markedly down in your opinion of them based on the collection?
No.
You don't have to answer that question. Do not answer that.
It was more the people who chose not to answer. I was a little more disappointed with to not participate and just not get a response. It's like, all right.
Mm-hmm. You know who you are out there. Next time Jen Yacenda sends you some questions to answer, you better get on it. And just to be fully transparent with our listeners, Tim and I both were respondents to some of these questions. So I think this is Tim fishing to find out whether or not Jen thinks less of him now that he's answered these questions. Okay, let's dive into this because we've definitely have now fulfilled the banter requirement up front. So let's get into some of these. So I think the first question, I'll kind of do the question. Well, it doesn't matter how we do it. I'll just do this one and then you guys can jump in. So the first question that's in this is, what is the book or books you've given the most as a gift and why? Or what are 1 to 3 books that have greatly influenced your life? I just want to say how much I enjoy the structure of that question, because I feel like I recommend books all the time. But when I sat down and thought like, well, which ones have I bought for people and given away? It changed or shrank my assessment criteria. So anyways, I'd love to hear like Jen, like what kinds of answers you got for that one.
I mean, this one, and I can shamelessly plug our Adobe Summit session to go check that out, the recorded version. But we cover this question in our session. It was one of the most overwhelming, most prolific, you know, questions that we got. I mean, the list of even just reading all the different books that people recommended, I felt like I got smarter knowing all the books that were out there that people found valuable and were giving as gifts. For me personally, one of the books that I usually give to, you know, direct reports on my team was Donna Wong's
Wall Street Journal Guide to Infographics.
Yeah.
It's such a quick read and it's like, it still stands the test of time. And I continue to give that one as gifts to analysts that are potentially struggling with visualizations, but we got things from memoirs to science fiction to a lot of psychology books, you know, how we sleep,
yes.
Blink, a lot of, you know, Power of Habit. There are so many titles that were just blew me away.
How We Sleep. I love that book.
That was just, everybody wanted to prove to you that they actually have read a book. I mean, that is one. There are times where I think that's the sort of thing where it's like, well, I read this book and I don't know. There were definitely a couple that kind of bubbled up for me that were ones that I've read and were super impactful. I don't know about the Why We Sleep.
Except that it's brilliant. Matthew Walker.
It's high on the list of books that I did not manage to finish. But I got the basic gist.
You'll love the one that I said that I gave away the most, Tim, because...
Oh, I'm sure yours were... Oh, the Strengths Finder.
Yes, Strengths Finder 2.0. Because I gave to every single person on my team. So that was a book I gave away a lot.
Fortunately, he had stopped that by the time I came to work.
Yeah, we shut all that down.
But I'm pretty sure I'd already gotten one or two copies at past jobs as it was. So
yeah, I made sure somebody handed you a copy.
I actually stole this idea from my sister, so I will begrudgingly give her credit for it. But the book that I buy the most to give to people is actually Emily Oster's book, Expecting Better. So anytime a friend says they're pregnant, I just give them the book. And it's like, here is some data so you don't have a bunch of people like freaking out and making your life awful and you can make grown-up decisions on your own like the very smart, capable woman you are. So my sister did that for all of her friends and now I do the same. So yeah, the Kiss Sisters are just bankrolling Emily Oster is the summary.
But it's interesting too, because I think there's books that kind of like you give away, but then there's also books that you're like pretty influenced by. So it's sort of like those are almost two different categories. I don't know. Did people answer that way or was I the only one?
No. Yeah. I think very few people answered it both ways. Most people answered it by books that influenced me the most. So,
okay,
we don't have a lot of book. We don't have a lot of book gifters. I'm a book gifter, so that's the way I answered it. I love to give books. So,
wait, so what book do you give away the most besides the Donna Wong book?
That was the one for my team, and then another one that I've given often is Simon Sinek's Start with Why.
Yes, that's a good book. Oh, God, Tim's like eye rolling like, shit, I can't handle this.
Oh, let's talk a little more about that because that's really good. I like
love that book.
Somebody actually just recommended to me his most recent book, which I forget the name of. So I'm going to look it up before the show's over. Maybe I can talk about it.
Tim, what about you? What book do you give away the most?
So mine have kind of evolved, but I actually would fall in the one that I count whether I've given it, which I have definitely ordered it and given it or have had people get, is the Information Dashboard Design by Stephen Few. I think I'm going to shift actually to Cole Nafflick's Data Storytelling. I think she actually covers a little bit broader and hits. I mean, she references Few. She references Wong. I mean, so that's just on this data visualization stuff really does matter and it's not that hard. I mean, but I also recommend the Donna Wong because it's even tighter.
See, I actually give away Nancy Duarte's book more than Donna Wong's.
Which one?
The Slideology. Although now I probably would choose Data Stories over Slideology, but Slideology for me like completely changed the way that I thought about presentations and like how I communicated stuff. And it was like my aha moment. So I share that with lots of people.
I just want to point out that as we're talking, actually, most of us give away books about communicating data. I'm noticing that trend. I just think that's really interesting because
Strengths Finder.
Not me. I was like the rest of you. I said some. I didn't say all of us.
I mean, you go through the thing and you score it, so that's a pointless metric.
And technically, if you understand your strengths, Tim, you will be more effective at communicating data. And I have a copy of Information Dashboard Design that I bought for myself, so you didn't have to gift it to me. But yeah, no, I just think that's interesting because like all three of you kind of unbeknownst to each other all think, you know, that's what you'd give those books away to people. No, I just think that's fascinating because it could be some other thing about digital analytics, you know, methods or other things like that. But communicating data seems to be like an interesting theme. Anyways, not trying to make causal elements where there aren't any. I just noticed that something very interesting. All right.
Oh, God, we've got to like do a 3-hour episode and get through all of these. But I really want to know about the purchase. So what purchase of $100 or less has most positively impacted your life in the last 6 months or in recent memory? I don't know why. That one just sings to me.
Yeah, this one was interesting because to have a positive influence on your life, but it was more from a professional lens. So it was kind of a hard question, I think, to answer. For me personally, my answer was the Wall Street Journal, which is a little bit of a cheat because it's not $100. It's a little bit more for an annual subscription. But just as an analyst, well, first, they do a great job. Well, for a lot of the time, they do a good job at presenting data within. Some of them can be biased, of course, but I think that a lot of their graphics can be really strong in their journalism, which is fun to see. And then just staying as an analyst, staying up to date on the headlines is something that for travel in particular is super helpful, just to know when there's major tornadoes or shifts in weather or, you know, globally what's going on across the world. So the Wall Street Journal for me is something that has really positively influenced my life. But that one was a kind of mixed bag. Some of my favorite responses that I remember getting was massages, investing, kind of like, in, you know, we sit at our desk chairs all the time and just getting some me time, really investing in a monthly habit of going out and getting massages and treating yourself was a great one. Jen Koons had a really interesting one where her hobby is bird watching. So she'd invested in a really, and I don't know the terminology, but a photography lens that allows her to more properly bird watch. And it's just a therapeutic, you know, an activity to get out of the house, and just something that has positively influenced her life that way. So
very nice.
And then we got ones like running shoes and video games. You know, we got a whole gamut of responses.
You can buy running shoes in America for under $100.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Actually, I feel like I get a higher cap because of the currency exchange. Okay. So I feel like for me.
So for 150 Australian dollars, Mo, what have you bought that impacted?
And I think Jamie may say the same thing. He was like, yep, that feels like our purchase pattern. That we set a budget and then rationalize why we need to spend more.
My thing is, like, I had one that immediately popped to mind, but it's not recent. And it was actually a gift from Jamie. But he bought me a SodaStream for my birthday like 7 years ago. And it hands down changed my life because I went from drinking like one bottle of water a day to maybe like five. So I feel like that has made my whole being better, but that's a weird one. But then I'm always spending money on plants and they make me super happy and I talk to them and I name them and I'm kind of weird.
You know, Mo, unrelated. I've recently, someone told me you SodaStream milk and use it in your pancakes and it makes them super fluffy.
That's the weirdest advice I think I've ever heard.
I know, but it really works. So go figure. Okay. Anyway, sorry.
We have lost the show.
Okay. Tim, what about you?
This question again seems like one of those where 38 or so responses, there had to be, again, not going to ask you to name them, but there had to be one or two where you're like, huh, were there? You don't have to share what it was.
Again, Tim, quit fishing.
Oh yeah. This one, actually, this one was more, not a lot of people answered this one. People ignored this question.
Yeah.
Tim, did you answer this question?
I don't think so. I can't. If I did, I don't remember what I did.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure how I'd answer it now.
I did. I bought a couch for $44 at a thrift store. And it was just like, I didn't know you could buy a couch for $44. It's not a nice couch.
Why has it positively impacted your life? Is it just the fact that you got a bargain and you still had like $60 left?
No, it was really about solving a problem creatively. We just needed, like, we didn't need anything fancy. We didn't need anything, but I always mentally think about couches costing like, you know, $1,800 to $2,500, something like that. Like, nice.
I'm not gonna lie, we just bought a couch and it was in that ballpark.
Yeah, no, that's what I go to furniture stores and buy couches when I buy couches, and I'd never even thought of it. And then one day, I can't remember why, but all of a sudden, Maria calls me and she's like, hey, go rent a U-Haul and come over to this store. We're going to buy it. And I was like, what? She'd gone over there with our sister-in-law. And so it was like, okay. And then I saw it and it was like, this couch looks fine to me.
Well, wait a minute. So sounds like that $44 was the cost of the couch.
$77, Tim.
Okay. Just checking.
Yeah. Because you can rent a U-Haul for like $15 an hour. It was easy. Okay. So yeah, all in $77. Still a big deal. Good savings. Anyway,
still met the criteria of the question. Very good.
Yeah, it was still under 100. Okay. So that was, I like that question because it is hard to answer that in a way that's sort of like, hey, this is advice I want to pass on. Like, write this on my tombstone. And actually, as I went back through the answers I gave you,
buy a couch for $44.
No, I don't want to write that on my tombstone. I'm just saying, like, it's hard to answer. That's what I mean. It's hard to answer. And some of them were like really hard. And I look back and I'm like, man, I was in a weird headspace when I answered a lot of these questions. So anyway, but that's just a me thing.
Yeah, a lot of the questions have that profound impact that makes it a little bit harder to answer.
Yeah. All right. So now we're going to move into tougher territory. Ready, Mo?
Oh, I'm scared.
How has a failure or apparent failure set you up for later success? Do you have a favorite failure of yours?
I knew we were going to get to this one, and I was really nervous about it.
What? Why are you nervous about it?
Because I do have a favorite failure.
Oh.
But I'm now going to talk about it on the podcast.
Well, you don't have to if you don't feel comfortable.
No, but I feel like... So the thing is, I've actually talked about this one at lots of like women networking events. And we actually did this question pretty much as an exercise. Like, what's a failure of yours? And like, I suppose, what did you learn from it? And for me, I got fired, which I never thought would happen in my whole fucking life. Like, I am not a get fired person, but it weirdly was the absolute best thing that's ever happened to me. And I learned a shit ton about the type of places I want to work, the places I don't want to work. Also, like, the red flags. Like, you know, when you're going through an interview process and there's red flags and you ignore them because you really want to leave your current job. Mm-hmm. And I ignored them. And I know now that would never, ever happen again, because I realized like how wrong it was, but I was also so thankful to get fired, because I think I wouldn't have quit and I would have been really, really unhappy for a very long period of time. So yeah, I don't know. It's weird, because this moment that I feel like I should probably be ashamed of, I've ended up like being okay with. And yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. Tim, what's your favorite failure?
I don't know. I mean, all I can do is like riff off of, like, I definitely point myself to the 9 longest months of my career was the 9 months that I worked at a large insurance company. And it was the same thing that it was a, I don't know if that's my apparent, but I pointed people to that still gave me a deeper lens into the inside of like the massive companies that I, you know, when I'm consulting with a large enterprise now, like having lived the ponderous nightmare of whether it's in the hospitality industry or banking or wherever, like, yep, I know this is why I don't want to be there again. And learning that, like, yeah, that's not the life for me. There can be some very large and great companies that are very admirable, but I don't know. I mean, I knew same sort of thing day one orientation. I'm like, this was a big mistake. And then 9 months of it's a big mistake, but at the same time, I wouldn't necessarily say it was a bad thing to have done, but I don't know. I don't know if I consider that a failure or just the reality of a career progression and trying to learn from it.
Jen?
My favorite failure was that I failed to, early on in my career, failed to ask for a promotion. It was my first job. I was at Starwood Hotels, and you know, I worked my butt off for the first, I don't know, 2 to 3 years, whatever it was. And I, you know, as a naive, relatively like first job right out of college, I didn't think you had to ask for promotions. Like, I just assumed that hard work got recognized and hard work, you know, deserved the promotion. And I was clearly, you know, in my head, deserving of a promotion, but I didn't ask for it in the cycles of, you know, corporations that, you know, you need to hit the budget and the big five review and all that personal development jazz. And so I had failed to ask for promotion, but so my boss at the time was just, he gave me a really strong lesson of like, you know, you need to ask for these, like, you're lucky I asked for one for you. But it was just a powerful lesson to learn that, yeah, people in big companies in particular are always asking for promotions. And you know, as a young employee, I hadn't gotten to that yet.
Yeah. Oh my god, that is amazing. Yeah. Like, what a huge lesson. Oh.
So I continue to tell every single one of my direct reports, like, that's, yeah, the reality of big organizations, but that's the reality of how to progress. And yeah, I'm no longer at a big company.
With all the staff I manage, I always ask them, like, anytime they get good feedback, like, I don't care if you put it into like a notes file or if you like forward the email and then put them all in a folder, but every time you get good feedback from someone in the company, like, you just put it in one place, because you're going to have to pitch at some point about why you want a promotion or like a pay increase. And if you have all that feedback stored somewhere, it will make it really bloody easy to be like, here is all the work I've done and this is why I deserve this. And it's like a habit that has actually, I found, been really useful for me as well. Okay, Michael, your biggest failure.
Oh, geez. I was hoping we could skip me because, you know, we got to get to all the questions. No, so what I wrote in there...
Time management of this episode maybe.
No, actually, Tim, I'm all over it. I wrote down our start time as we got going. We've all been going for a little over 30 minutes, so we're so good for both. All right. So, well, Mo, so you're not alone. I also was fired from one job, which I am also not a get fired person typically. And it was a real moment of trying to figure out sort of, I think there's a lot of, in those moments, it's sort of like, well, they did the wrong thing, but it also forced me to say, well, how did you contribute to that? And kind of look inside myself to sort of say, well, the one thing you can change about that situation is just you. And so that's kind of what I did. And, you know, it was probably the best thing that could have happened. In fact, I'm really positive it was. And actually the resulting years, but actually a better failure from earlier in my career was when I was just starting out doing consulting with WebTrend software. And I went to a client and they was installing it and setting up their reports. And they had given me a list of reports that they wanted created. And so I created those reports and I still had a little extra time that day after setting some of those up. And so I was like, you know what? They'll probably want this report and a couple of these. So I set up some additional reports as well to, like, you know, give them some extra stuff. And I leave a couple of weeks later, the account manager gets a phone call from the client. And I just happened to be sitting in her office talking to her when she listened to this voicemail. And it was the client calling and saying, hey, when Michael was out here, he set up like all these extra reports we really don't want or need. It's confusing a lot of people. Is there anyone that you could send back out here to fix this? You know, hopefully somebody different than Michael. And I was sitting there, and here's the worst part. There was no one else. I was the only analytics person in the company. So I had to go back out to that client and fix those mistakes. And the valuable lesson is really listen to what clients are asking from you and don't freelance on those kinds of things. I thought I was adding value, but really I was creating a problem for them. And so It's really important to think about, okay, what is it that they really need? And so I've tried to like take that lesson to heart. So that was painful, like going out and spending half a day at a company where I knew they did not want me there. Like they were like, we're both here because you have to be, and it's your fault that we're together.
I feel like I should share that I've never been fired. I've been laid off from my first job ever, and I've had two bosses scream at me that they should fire me.
Technically, Tim, I did not scream at you. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, we're talking about the conversation you were having in your head.
Yeah, that's right. That was the internal dialogue. Oh, you could hear that? All right, let's keep going. Okay, this is such a good question, and it's going to take some explaining. So if you could have a gigantic billboard anywhere with anything on it, metaphorically speaking, getting a message out to millions or maybe billions, what would it say and why?
And how many people answer? Like, I'd like to know on a lot of these, like, what ballpark was this a heavily answered, lightly answered, middle of the road answered question?
I know I need to go back and do some counting for each of these, but this was probably a middle, I would say. But this was one where there was a clear theme across everyone that answered it. And it was just this, just to have more empathy. It came in multiple different flavors. One person literally just answered with one word, empathy. We're all human was another one. In a world where you can be anything, be kind. And then mine personally is to live by the golden rule. Do unto others as you wish done unto yourself. So, you know, just this whole notion of being a good person was a clear winner in this question.
The funny thing is my like immediate reaction when I saw this question was something about kindness. And there was a really beautiful video I was watching the other day about like the crazy world of COVID and post-COVID, about how, I don't know, people are actually being kinder to each other right now. And I'm sure that like there are lots of examples of they're not, but there are lots of examples in the world of where people are. And, you know, not that there is a silver lining to this whole hot mess, but if people can get reminded of that, that's a nice thing. But I don't know, I feel like I'd really have to think about the words. Tim?
I think I'd be immediately negotiating for, I'm like, can I get, you know, there's three billboards outside. I've got a lot to say.
I was actually like, how are you going to fit this all on one billboard?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, well, you know, how about if I had like five? Yeah, I don't know. I passed.
Well, and honestly, don't put a paragraph on a billboard. You didn't answer this one, Tim?
I don't think so. I really feel like maybe I should pull up what I actually...
What you did? Yeah. I said my catchphrase, which is analytics is people business. It's about people, which isn't totally like the same as some of the things that people said about empathy, but it's in there. It's sort of like people and people, like on all sides of this, is all what analytics is about. And anyways, that's really interesting.
So it wouldn't have been know your job, do your job. See, that's the sort of thing I would have been like...
That is so what you would have said.
Do your fucking job.
That would be good too. Because if your job is people and empathy, then you need to know how to do that and do it. Yeah. Great insight, Tim.
Yeah, but my only thing is that some of the best teams that I've been in is when people do more than their job. Tim's like, no, just do your fucking job.
Tim always does more than just his job, just FYI, from personal experience.
I'm just playing through in my head the whole debate we had months ago around the people who, well, there was somebody who was a coworker of yours at the time that was like, nope, like 9 to 5 and then I'm out, I'm off. And we were having it where I was like, well, you need to find your, like, if you find your passion, like, yeah, if you love what you're doing, if you love your work, it's not work sort of thing. That's a whole rabbit hole to go down, that if you don't find what you actually really enjoy doing, then yeah, you're going to be watching the clock and you're going to have a hard time. So know your job, but find the right job, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a billboard kind of guy.
Okay.
Out of home. It's all digital these days.
Okay, Jen, this one I need to talk about purely because I need to hear what other people said, because this is what I'm not good at. When you feel overwhelmed or unfocused or have lost your focus temporarily, what do you do? If helpful, what questions do you ask yourself? I so want to hear what people said to this.
Yeah, this was a fun one, and we didn't get to this one in our presentation. There was two very distinct categories of people that emerged answering this question. There was either the group that decided that they needed to go sweat it out, you know, go outside for a walk, go surfing, you know, get some exercise, someone chops wood, you know, anything to kind of get their physical kind of endorphins going was one camp. And then there was another camp of people that was, they're going to sit down and write it out and just, you know, write a to-do list, write out what they, you know, what the starting point is, like kind of more of like a project management type approach, was just to sit down and kind of word vomit what everything needs to get done before then reprioritizing, rearranging, and then tackling it. So that was like two very distinct camps of people. I was more on the write it out. Like if I'm getting overwhelmed and I need to refocus, I will just take the time to list out a to-do list just to get it all down on paper. And then, you know, the physical kind of let's cross things off the list, that really helps me.
Plus one to that one.
The funny thing is when I write a paper to-do list, and I've actually told my team this because I want them to call me out on it. When I write a paper to-do list, that's where I'm really losing my shit. That's where I'm like so overwhelmed. I'm like freaking out. The list very quickly has like 30 small things on it. And one of my team members the other day, he's like the best person at like helping me. Every time he sees me do this, he's like, Mo, we've got our one-on-one now. We're going to end 15 minutes early. This is a one-on-one where I'm meant to be coaching him. He's like, we're going to end 15 minutes early. I want you to use those 15 minutes. Go to Jira, put all your stuff in Jira, and throw away your paper to-do list because you're like in the spiral. And I'm like, okay, all right, I'm going to do it. And so he like gives me the 15 minutes of my day back. I go to Jira, I put all my tickets in there properly, and like the list gets done. And then I'm like back in the zone. And it's one of the, for me, like he was only able to do that because I told him what my spiral signs were. But now I'm so thankful because anytime he sees me do it, he like calls me out on it straight away. And yeah, like I don't, it's not necessarily like something I do for myself, but sometimes like letting the people around you know what are the signs that you're unfocused or you're feeling really overwhelmed so that they can also help you like refocus.
I also feel like I know you, but your accent still throws me a little bit. So when you said go to Jura.
Jura.
I heard Jura, like Jura whiskey, which is kind of making some of the podcast rounds. And so I was like, and it could be that both of them like go to Jura. And when you're done, go to Jura. They completely different approaches. There's medicate, self-medicate or organize.
That's interesting.
What do you do helps when you're getting unfocused or overwhelmed?
So it's really interesting because now I'm like, oh, I should try taking walks when I feel this way. I'm like, that's a great idea. I was like, that really does work. I needed to think of that more.
It does.
So I spend time writing out what's going on in my head. So it can be a couple different avenues. If it's emotional or just like confusing or frustrating situation, or I feel like something's not right in my head, that I just write out, like I just do like an emotional inventory, just like what's going on. And then if it's like all like these tasks and everything and it's too much, then I have a system. And I use Evernote, but I just start writing a list. And actually, I've started taking audio recordings on my phone even because I just take 15 minutes and I just start talking into my phone or just start typing. And everything that comes to my head gets on the list, every single thing. So just it all has to come out. So just like it came up, boom, it goes on the list. Came up, boom, it goes on the list. Again, again, again. Literally things like attend this meeting. It goes on the list. I'm attending that meeting today. It's going on my list. So that way I can check it off. And it's a thing I did, even though all I did was just show up to the meeting or whatever. So it could be like send an email to so-and-so that it's literally just sort of like a sentence. But if I send that email, I get to check it off my list. So like the little to big things. And then I can go back through after I get a little more control of that and go prioritize that list. And I kind of like use my little system to like bold the things that are really important. I can bubble those up. But sometimes you just have to like get a system to like pull it out of you, stick it somewhere else. Then you can look at it and start making some progress. But no, I'm totally like the same as you, Mo, where I can get, you know, you kind of just get overwhelmed with stuff sometimes. And you're just like, okay, learn those signals, learn how to stop yourself, learn how to take a step. So that's been a big, big deal for me. Yeah.
Fascinating. I just lash out at my podcast co-hosts and it's kind of like, it saves me the walk.
Yeah.
I still get a little bit of heart rate, you know, kind of up.
I don't know, Tim.
Tim, what do you actually do?
You in the last month have published a very public list. So I'm thinking maybe there's some list process that you do go through.
Oh, I have lived and died by lists for forever. If I find myself not taking the time to put it on in Todoist, then I am. That's when I'm like, whoops, I'm getting to the point. But then it is pretty. Then I'm like, let me just put it on there. And I mean, there's all sorts of. But I also believe that there are lists work for some and lists don't work for others. There are people who really should have a list working for them because shit is falling through the cracks right and left. It has worked for me for so long, and I've gone through the paper mode and then I've been digital lists for years now. And because it sort of forces you to say, if I write it down, I'm not going to forget it. And it's there and I can assess that, yeah, you know what? This can wait for 3 days, but I've written it down. I'm not going to forget it. If I need to tell somebody, I'll use it. Hey, it's on my list. I'll be getting to this, you know, whenever. So,
yeah, but I think like, and the thing that happens to me is like lists can also then be the cause of being overwhelmed because suddenly you have like 30 things on a list and you're like, yeah, shit, there is no conceivable way I'm going to do all of these things and like still sleep.
Well, that's where some of the kind of list oracles will say, don't do some of what Michael said, which was like, write the gimmies down, which I'm not sure I completely buy into because I'm kind of the, if it's got to get done and I can write it down, yes, it will give me progress. But the idea is that if you capture it, then that will force you to say, well, I can't do them all at once. Let me put them in the right order. And once I'm eating that elephant one bite at a time, I've at least defined the elephant. Now let me start, you know, taking bites of it. You're looking at me like you've never heard that expression before.
I have not, but
how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time?
Well, vaguely, but it still seems weird to eat an elephant. Yeah. But for a while I did do the important, urgent, not important, not urgent quadrant.
Yeah. Yep.
Which works better for me, I find. But
I think as a construct, that actually works just to like remind myself. And but there is the weird thing of defining important to who and urgent to who, because it's very easy to, I think as analysts, we tend to, we're such pleasers that if somebody else, if it's urgent for them, we will make ourselves believe it is super important for them. And we'll just like assume that. And so I think putting that kind of construct around like, well, wait a minute, this person responds to me 4 to 7 days after I ask them anything. I'm pretty sure they asked me something they're not expecting an answer in 20 minutes.
Yeah. So that actually dovetails really great into a different question, which is, in the last 5 years, what have you become better at saying no to? What new realizations and approaches helped? Any other tips? Because I think you kind of like connect to that dot, Mo, when you're like, if it gets too many things on it, then what do you do? And that's an answer that I have, is sort of like, when I get it out of my head, it helps me see everything in the cold light of day and say, okay, we're not going to prioritize that because there simply isn't enough time, you know, and I can make those choices. But anyways, I don't know who else wants to talk about that question.
Jen, why don't you share, did very many people answer this one?
I was going to say, no, this is probably one of the ones that, and it kind of made sense that, you know, asking analysts that, I think we struggle, all of us struggle with this one. We did not get a ton of responses. Some people are just, yeah, I have no problem saying no. I think the one thing that probably, one of my favorite answers, which I probably struggle with the most, is saying no to that one last drink, especially when you go to conferences or go to a happy hour. I end up staying, but there was a one response that had a really great kind of, I've got a 9 p.m. curfew and that's it. I'm home. I have no problem with kind of just living with that kind of steadfast rule. And then the other kind of clear one, which is probably a little bit different now in COVID, is saying no to meetings. Michael, I think you were in the camp of saying no to meetings, and I don't know if you have a specific rule for what you say no to, but that was one of unnecessary meetings was one that a lot of people were aware of. But that's not really a how-to or how you develop it.
Yeah, it comes from this place of like having too much to do than you can possibly accomplish. And so like you literally have to force yourself to make decisions you sort of consider suboptimal in the moment. And so the way I talk about it is like learning how to build the capacity to disappoint people. Like, and I think, Tim, you're onto something, which is we don't want people to be upset with us. Like, I really want people to like me. I want to get on things. And as an analyst, I want to like get to your question and those kinds of things. And you got to space it out and time it out. I remember certain days in the midst of like growing the analytics practice of search discovery, and we were just growing at such a tremendous rate. I'd be on the elevator on the way up to the work in the office, and I'd literally be giving myself a pep talk. I'm going to go in there and I'm going to cancel these 3 meetings and I'm going to push those back and I'm going to, and like, I'd have to psych myself up because it was so hard for me. Luckily I was alone in the elevator, just FYI, no one else was there.
The crazy person on the elevator. You're like slapping yourself in the face and you're,
who's the man? No. So, but literally I would be psyching myself up to go in and like go do these things that I was afraid to do in a certain sense. And it's sort of, it's hard. So, but after you start doing it and nothing bad happens, it builds up this competency to start understanding more clearly what's most important and what can actually wait and where your focus needs to be. And I think that was actually over the course of a year, year and a half, where I was learning some of those lessons. Some of the biggest development in my leadership capability was the ability to kind of start taking those things on and be able to actually address them. It's tough. I don't know.
I feel like that one can be kind of the dangerous one, because to me, I mean, I'm not good at saying no, and I'm not good at delivering, you know, right at expectations. I want to go above and beyond. I think a lot of us are wired that way. But when I look at, when you hear those lectures of like, you know, work smarter, not harder, like you shouldn't be, you know, to me, I'm like, well, shit ton of my career is probably because I got interested in doing something. I really wanted to do it well, or somebody asked me if I could help. And yeah, I could have said no, you know, half of the time, but some of those were professional development opportunities. I got to push myself. I got to do more. And it, I mean, so I haven't ever gone and asked for a promotion. Actually, Jen and I had a whole separate little exchange about that, where I also, I think, believe calling out that I'm a, you know, upper middle class white cisgendered dude. So there's that whole piece as well. It's easy for me to say, no, I just, you know, work hard and, you know, stuff comes. But I think there's a danger for where you are in your career. If you're like, well, I'm going to say no, because by golly, you're asking me for this at 4:30 and it's going to take me, you know, 2 hours.
But I don't think that's the intent, right? I think, so for example, we
But there's got to be good judgment in knowing which one of those
yes,
it is.
But I don't think people who are new in their career are struggling with this. Like, I think generally the skill to say no or to push back is something you have to develop as your responsibilities grow. And yeah, like we reached out to someone who like we'd love to have on the podcast at some point, and she was basically like, look, I'm working 5 days a week. I have 3 little kids. I don't have capacity for this right now. And I'm like, cool. I'm really glad that you told me that, because I agree. And like, I get asked to do stuff and I probably say no, maybe 10 or 20% of the time, where I'm just like, you know what? I don't have the brain power. I want to be able to do a good job of whatever it is that you've invited me to do. And I don't have the bandwidth to do that right now. And I'm going to say no. And I could say yes to every single opportunity, but I also would do some of them at a really, I do a really shitty job at them, which.
Jen's thinking right now, she was like, son of a, I could have said no. Son of a, and I did the questions. What the hell?
We're so glad you didn't realize you had that option.
No, this is a no-brainer. I would never say no.
Okay, we're out of time. We've got to start wrapping up, but here's one last question. Only Jen is allowed to answer. Here it goes. This is just the way it is. That's sometimes my job is to disappoint people sometimes. No,
but okay, people, if you really like this topic, let us know, because I'd be happy to do a whole nother hour on the other like 6 questions we haven't even gotten to.
So this is the one that I would love for Jen, you just to give a little bit of some of the advice, because I think it'll be applicable. What advice would you give to a smart, driven college student or junior analyst about to enter the real world, quote unquote? What advice should they ignore also?
I would say we didn't get so much of the advice to ignore answers. There were actually a ton of themes that popped up on this one of just reoccurring. People had a lot of great advice to share, which was great. 2 of my personal favorites I will share. One is careers are not linear. That was a theme of just letting, you know, early, you know, students entering the workforce, letting them know that, you know, there's no clear correct path for a career. So that's just, you know, a lesson that I don't think coming out of college, a lot of kids know there's certain expectations that they want to live up to with their jobs and careers. So that was a good takeaway. And then the other one is always be learning. That came through in a lot of answers of just always looking for opportunities to continue to build your own skill set. And, you know, Tim, this comes naturally for him, but being able to do things that aren't necessarily expected of you, and just finding opportunities if someone doesn't know how to do something, especially when they're young and motivated and hungry, that there's tons of learning opportunities out there to be impactful within a new organization, new career. And then you can also find what you may not realize that you love to do. You could find things by accident that way as well.
Awesome.
Nice. Good job, Michael, figuring out the question to wrap on.
I do this. This is like a thing I, you know, kind of, no, I'm just kidding. It was dumb luck, but I figured it probably have a pretty awesome answer. Thank you so much, Jen.
That's a perfect example of questions. Like, we just collected so much great advice. It was really fun trying to distill it. And now even in this podcast format, I mean, just being able to share some of those answers, it's rewarding. So thank you for that opportunity. That question 8 was a good one.
All right, we've got to start to wrap up. And again, really awesome conversation. And I think all the engagement that we're having hopefully will transfer over to all of you listening. One of the things we do on the show is called The Last Call. We go around the horn and just talk about something we found interesting that we think might be of interest to our listeners. And Jen, you're our guest. Do you have a last call you'd like to share?
I do. And keeping in tune with this entire podcast episode, the question one was my favorite question with the book recommendations. And I actually went out and bought one of the books that was recommended. It's called The Personal MBA by Josh Kaufman. And it's essentially a condensed MBA in a book. It's a very awesome guide to everything between sales and marketing, everything that you would typically learn in a business school setting without the business school price tag. And it's just a different way to look at, you know, whether or not you need, whether or not it's the worth the investment for the higher education, which is also very timely given the current state of education and everything moving online. So it's a great read, very easy, just to help highlight what you do and don't know about how businesses run.
Outstanding. All right, Mo, what about you? What's your last call?
I, big shock, have a weird one. So I'm doing a throwback to episode 96 with Lizzie Allen, which was all about how we learn. So one of the reasons I'm telling you all this is so you can hold me accountable. The other reason is because I want to encourage other people to do it. But Lizzie's argument was that basically it was very similar. Like, you don't need extra qualifications. You just need to build out your portfolio of work, which for analysts can be a public GitHub. So one of the goals that I've set myself for the next quarter, literally last night at 6 p.m., was that there's a piece of code I've been working on, and it's like a mistake that I have made probably 30 or 40 times. It's not a mistake. Technically, the code works, but it's more just like, I know it's hugely inefficient. And so by the end of the season, I want to fix that problem and have the code on GitHub public. So you'll all know whether or not I actually achieve my goal. But I'm also just putting this as a last call, I guess, to encourage other people to make the same commitment. And then it will also help, I guess, share some of our code so other people know how to do stuff.
I just stood up GitHub pages on Netlify over the weekend.
Oh, boy. But yeah, Tim, what's your last call?
So I now have the great fortune to get to work with Corey Underwood, and he, and I know he did this in a very compressed form amount of time, but he wrote on LinkedIn a 50 things I believe about MarTech. And it is just like, it's a little 50 point listicle, and it opens with the anything that includes with a single line of JavaScript in the marketing material likely isn't being fully honest, which like we've all like, you're like, okay, that's good. That's solid. We all kind of know that, but it just has other little, there are little like couplets and triads. I think one of my favorite, like 15, 16, and 17 are anything dealing with the concept of time is likely to be buggy on release. 16 is any bugs related to the concept of time are likely to be difficult to find. And then 17 is any bugs related to the concept of time are likely difficult to explain. So the whole thing is kind of, and it bounces kind of, you know, broad and very, very narrow, but from as an analyst and knowing that Corey, like for a while now, is kind of like knows browser tech inside and out. It's, and he's kind of been on the dev side, but definitely has a foot in analytics. And it's just, it's a quick and fun little read.
I swear you were going to say delightful, but
nothing
anyway.
Is delightful to Tim.
It is delightful as well.
Michael, what's yours?
So my last call, I have a couple, but we should just start with about a month ago, Tim Wilson made a list of 50 things I believe about analytics, which was the inspiration for Corey's list that Tim just talked about. So if you're going to read Corey's, you should definitely read Tim's. Him, Tim, you're only wrong about a few of them. So that's pretty exciting. And
when I did add a number 51, which was go read Corey's list on
Marketing. So fair enough. But actually, the thing that's been banging around my head as we prep for this episode and I was thinking about it was there's a really famous column by a journalist named Mary Schmick. I don't know how to say her name. Sorry, Mary, if you ever hear this, which you probably won't. She wrote, it's basically sort of like a commencement address if she was going to give a commencement address. And it was put to music and spoken word by Baz Luhrmann, an Aussie. And so probably most people are familiar with him saying this. It's just the Wear Sunscreen song, basically, is what it became known as. It was actually kind of a hit in like Ireland and the UK and stuff. Anyways, this is a very excellent sort of advice column, I guess, if you were going to give people graduating advice. Anyways, it was kind of going through my head because of the topic of this podcast. So that's also my last call. If you have not heard that, check out both the column by Mary Schmidt and also the, I'm pretty sure we can find on YouTube, a copy of the Baz Luhrmann spoken word of the same thing, which is interesting because I actually thought it was for the longest time a commencement address, but it turns out it was a column instead. Okay, you've probably been listening and thinking, hey, I want to think through some of these things, or I'd love to react to some of those, and we would love to hear from you. And the best ways to do that is to reach out to us. You can reach us on our Twitter account. You could reach us on the Measure Slack. You could reach us on our LinkedIn page. And Jen, you're on Measure Slack, right?
Yes.
Okay, I thought so. I was like, I'm pretty sure. I think I've talked to you on the Measure Slack before, so I was like, I'm pretty sure you are. Anyway, so you reach out to Jen too, and certainly if you do. And if you haven't yet, go back to, I believe the content's still available at the Adobe Virtual Summit. You should definitely go take the time to go listen to that, because you also get some of Eric's, Matisoff's perspectives, which are also really excellent. So still great use of your time. Jen, we can't thank you enough. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Now that you know that you could have said no to this, it's even more, we're even more thankful that you said yes.
Yeah, that round two for the other six questions is going to be tough.
But seriously, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Sign me up for round two.
And all the work that you put into getting all these questions and finding this advice, it's actually really great content. We really appreciate you putting that effort into it. Also, well, we always want to mention our show producer, Josh Crowhurst, who does such a fine job, and we are super thankful for his efforts. And I know I speak for both of my co-hosts, Mo Kiss and Tim Wilson, when I say, no matter what questions in life you're answering right now, just keep analyzing.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Measure Slack group. We welcome your comments and questions. Visit us on the web at analyticshour.io, facebook.com/analyticshour, or at Analytics Hour on Twitter.
So smart guys wanted to fit in, so they made up a term called analytics. Analytics don't work.
Analytics. Oh my God. What the fuck does that even mean?
But they did a pixel research. I didn't get rid of the pie charts back.
Don't ever change agendas on Tim at the last minute.
You really sound like you've moved on.
You've moved on. Yeah. No, I sense no residual emotion at all.
Oh, and Tim, thanks for. Was it you? You were the. I don't even know what day it is.
I don't know what day it is for you either, Mo. Most people, somebody tried to tell me the other day that that song didn't come from Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I don't remember who it was.
Well, they're wrong.
Yeah, I know. I was like, no.
Rock flag in the 4-hour analysis. That'll be a little bit of a, people will have to think about that.